Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
So tonight on Raw, they had some heavy lifting to do to make Payback feel important. Important enough on a busy weekend to skip watching AEW Collision, which is not part of a network pack. It's not part of a premium package on Peacock. And also, you know, to say I'm suspicious of the strategy of putting Payback on Saturday is a little bit to take away a little of the incentive for people to ante up $50 for AEW All Out on Sunday, which, by the way, has some heavy lifting to do between now and Sunday, which will primarily take place on Wednesday on Dynamite, trying to set up that card. And I thought they did a good job. This was a show with some serious developments that built the main event effectively. And that being Shinsuke Nakamura against or challenging Seth Rollins for the world title, and also the co-main event of Trish Stratus against Becky Lynch in a cage. So I would like to know what you guys think of the build that they did, and if you were swayed to end up watching Payback if you weren't planning. That is part of what WWE's incentive certainly was on tonight's episode, is get people motivated to tune in. The Shinsuke Nakamura Seth Rollins segment especially stood out to me as overachieving my expectations. I thought that that match, having to sort of co-main event on Sunday, was about a couple weeks ago just not even going to come close to being enough. But it turns out that that I think they did a good job. I thought the video package with Shinsuke was really well done. I thought Shinsuke had a good sinister look to him, and I thought the karate workouts, along with the captions about wanting to dismantle and sort of accelerate the situation with Seth and his back, to accelerate him not even being able to wrestle anymore, and try to make Saturday the time that happens. And then, again, bringing his family into it was really effective. And then the attack afterwards, the facial expression by Nakamura as he was about to attack Seth from behind, I thought was like top shelf body language. And I thought it was a good answer to Seth Rollins standing in the middle of the ring. And when he called out Nakamura, and when Nakamura didn't come out, saying, "Hey, I want the Shinsuke who headlined the Tokyo Dome. I want the Shinsuke who was torn up in NXT." And then when only a video package aired, he goes, "Oh, only a video package from the great Shinsuke." And then when the attack happened, and Shinsuke looked at Seth the way that he did as he approached him from behind and then attacked him, and then had more words for him in his ear, a callback to kind of how this feud elevated to begin with. That was really well done. So I will argue that that WWE overachieved and elevated that main event to something that I'm a lot more interested in watching, but even more so that I think they've moved that into the realm of being a match that people are going to think is one of the bigger matches on the weekend. Now, obviously, it's not a Roman Reigns match. It's not a top-tier Seth Rollins opponent. Shinsuke has been marginalized for too long, and it's going to be tough for people to believe that Shinsuke is going to win the title. I mean, I think that's too heavy of a lift, and I don't think that they achieved that. But I think people are going to be interested in the grudge. I think people are going to think this is now deeply personal, and that Seth is going to arrive looking to really go after Shinsuke. But even more important than Seth being motivated and seeing this as personal, I think Shinsuke has elevated himself back to the level that I'm not saying this is necessarily peak Shinsuke, because I think when he first debuted, there was a lot of anticipation, but he was a bit of a letdown along the journey. I think this brings Shinsuke to the level in terms of body language as a heel, and the delivery of having him do these pre-recorded packages, speaking in speaking with captions so that we can hear him in his inflection, which feels more natural in his native language, but the captions convey then what he's saying. And I thought the production values were excellent on that also. So all around, really well done hype for that match. And then you add to it the Trish Stratus hype, with Trish getting involved in the False Count Anywhere match between Becky Lynch and Zoe Stark earlier in there, and, or during the match, and then the finish where Stark sent Trish accidentally through a table, and looked dismayed over doing that, and like she might be in trouble sending her mentor through a table by mistake, and then that leading to Becky getting a big win. It does now bring into question, how much is Trish going to be damaged from that, and is that going to play into whether Trish has a chance to actually beat Becky in Trish's first cage match ever. I'm intrigued with what that means. You know, why they did that finish with Zoe mistakenly knocking Trish. Was it just to free up Becky to have an excuse to beat her, or is it to create dissension between them? I don't know. But as Cole exclaimed at the end of the match, what a match those two had in terms of the violence, brawling up on the ramp, back to ringside, at ringside with the Bexploder suplexes, and then some pretty big table spots at the end. So I think the two co-main events for Payback, WWE did some good heavy they had heavy lifting, and I think that they accomplished that heavy lifting with what they did to hype the top two matches. There's other matches on Payback they did a good job hyping also, most notably the Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn against Judgment Day match, but they also hyped LA Knight against The Miz and Rhea Ripley against Raquel Rodriguez. This is a very Raw-based lineup at this point, and Raw, I think, did a really good job creating a sense that this isn't just a utterly skippable throwaway show. And I think I'm kind of surprised by the job that they were able to do here. So that is key talking points here on this show. Let's pause and formally introduce the show, and then we'll get into other aspects of the show and callers and emails. By the way, we are awaiting Mauricio Pomerantz joining us. He's had some technical issues and isn't able – he was scheduled to be our co-host, but isn't able to be on the show with us yet, but we're still trying to work that out. That's why I'm doing a monologue here at the beginning, which is a little bit different – actually, quite a bit different than normal, where I usually throw to the co-host. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, August 28th, 2023. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program. I'm the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter and the website pwtorch.com. I also host VIP podcasts throughout the week, including The Fix with Todd Martin, Everything with Rich and Wade, and post pay-per-view and PLE roundtables. One of them was this past Sunday afternoon after AEW All In. Todd Martin and Rich Fan and I spoke for well over an hour, not only about the card that we watched, but the backstage stuff with CM Punk and Jack Perry that unfortunately cast a bit of a shadow on some of the stellar performances on that pay-per-view. This weekend, we'll be covering both Payback and All Out. So it's a doubleheader weekend, Saturday night WWE Payback, and Sunday night AEW All Out. This is a very busy weekend, and not only will I be hosting post-pay-per-view and PLE roundtables this weekend, but Greg Parch will be doing double duty with Wrestling Night in America on the PLE Torch Daily Cast, both Saturday night after Payback and Sunday night after All Out. So join Greg live within 5-10 minutes after the major events end. You can go to pwtorchdailycast.com to find information on the live streaming of that, or look at my reports at pwtorch.com. At the top and bottom, I'll have information on how you can live stream or call to listen or call to participate or email to contribute to those live post shows. Those are free. The Greg Parks hosted Wrestling Night in America post event shows are free. They're live, and you can download them later on the PW Torch Daily Cast feed. Search PW Torch to look for those later at night if you can't hear them live as they air. And then the roundtables that I'll be hosting are VIP exclusive. And to hear those, go to pwtorch.com/govip for full details on becoming a VIP member. All right, so as we await and hope to hear from Mauricio, in fact, let's give him a try now. I think he might have worked through the issues. Stand by. All right. Hey, Mauricio, we are live on the air, and I'm glad that we're able to connect with you here a few minutes into the show. Welcome.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, we sure can.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
I
had a bit of a connection issue, but I'm here.
Yes. Hey, stuff happens. No problem. I just spent the first 10 minutes talking about what Raw did tonight to hype Payback's top two matches, singles matches, the Trish Stratus, Becky Lynch cage match, and also Seth Rollins and Shinsuke. And I thought they did a good job elevating both matches, especially Seth Nakamura, above my expectations. So I want to get your thoughts on that in a moment and also give out the phone numbers and the email here before we do that. So stand by. If you are listening to our live stream, you can give us a call. The number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That flags you on our switchboard so that we know that you want to be on the show. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. The other voice you hear joining us is Mauricio Pomares. Mauricio, remind me how to say your last name again.
Mauricio Pomares.
Pomares. Thank you. Mauricio Pomares, he covers Raw alongside my reports every Monday night. He's been doing that for months and months, and I really look forward to hearing what he has to say about the segments. And Mauricio, it is great to have you back on the show. Even with the technical difficulties, I am glad that you're able to work them out and be with me tonight.
Thank you. It's good to be back. It's been a while. And
yes,
yeah.
We haven't been able to line up a time for a little while, but the last time you were on, when you made your debut, as I told you afterwards, you did a great job, and I am excited to talk WWE and Raw in particular with you once again.
Yeah, it's cool. I'm ready.
All right. So, again, we welcome callers to give us a call and join the conversation. Mauricio, before I go to our first caller, which is Brad in Florida, I want to just get your quick take on, if you agree with me, that they overachieved in building the Seth Rollins Shinsuke Nakamura match compared to what you would have imagined they could do in, you know, 3 weeks build. So start with that. What do you think of the hype tonight?
I think they actually killed it. That was great. The first week wasn't great when they had Shinsuke Nakamura got a live promo, but these past 2 weeks with the video packages, it was excellent. This is the best presentation Shinsuke Nakamura has had since moving to the main roster. This and last week completely elevated this rivalry to make it pay-per-view worthy.
I think Shinsuke Nakamura, in his body language in the vignette that we saw, the video package with the captioned interview, and then the look he had on his face as he attacks Seth from behind and then put him in the chin lock and then spoke into his ear some more. I thought Shinsuke showed an edge and a sinisterness, a sinister side of him that we haven't seen with that level of credibility. There's always been something about Shinsuke in the main roster of WWE, or a lot of the time, most of the time, he's come across as not as threatening, more of a rock star here to perform. I'm kind of believing he wants to take out Seth. He wants to injure him. He wants to leave him bedridden. He wants to take out his back and, as he said, put him out of his misery early. I was believing. I was buying in. And I think Seth, it was interesting that Seth even brought up, where is the Shinsuke from New Japan in the Tokyo Dome? Where is Shinsuke from NXT? And we got the version that I think all of us were hoping for before Shinsuke showed up in the main roster. I'm again, really impressed. And I don't think fans are going to think Shinsuke is going to win the title, but I think they've maximized the interest that people can have in this feud. And I think they probably created some doubt in fans' minds that Seth is a certainty to win. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I don't think he's going to win, but this is by far the closest they could have gone with this build to make Nakamura look legitimate, look like a real threat.
Yeah,
once again, I don't think he'll win, but this is the closest he's come to looking legitimate since winning the Rumble in 2018.
Yeah, five plus years and this is the best he looked. It's really fun to see. I like when we get just an unexpected extra chapter of somebody being a top-tier main event player. And it's not just Shinsuke. It's Seth and his performance tonight and the production team and the framing of the feud. I think they really came through. So let's bring Brad from Florida on to the show and get his take on Raw tonight and what we've talked about so far. Brad, welcome.
Hey, Wade. Hey, Mauricio. Wade, you touched upon so many of the things that I was going to say. I mean, honestly, but like the build for Payback went from, you know, things that I really didn't care about at all to even elevating the Becky-Trish feud tonight. I mean, that last match yep. was great, and it did so much to actually get me interested in this Trish-Becky match for Payback. I mean, it really did. That ending was with Zoe punching Trish into the table. I think it created a lot of compelling, you know, kind of potential storytelling for what's next. And the one thing that I was a little surprised about is that they kept showing, you know, for the last, you know, 40 minutes of the show, two or three times, Tiffany Stratton's in the crowd. And then yes. by the end, they were actually in the section where Tiffany Stratton was sitting. I just noticed because I saw the people that were sitting around her. I really thought she was going to get involved because they kind of had a little thing where they were talking about each other last week on NXT. I know you're not a huge NXT follower every week in and week out, Wade, but are you surprised that Tiffany was kind of highlighted like that and didn't at all get involved in that match in any way whatsoever, even just a stare down or something? I was just kind of surprised by that.
Yeah, I think they're just planting a seed to create familiarity with the audience that isn't watching NXT or isn't necessarily familiar with her. I'm interested in WWE's trajectory in terms of the integration of NXT into Raw and SmackDown, and especially Raw because of the proximity of the shows and the Judgment Day, especially in Seth paying visits to the show. It seems like they feel that there's some momentum, and they're not wrong about co-promoting the two brands, and that there is a benefit from co-mingling, and that there can be a synergy that will actually turn NXT into a more valuable property in the TV landscape, both in terms of TV rights fees for the show, but also NXT specials on Peacock. Mauricio, what did you think of Tiffany being at ringside? Were you surprised she didn't interfere, or do you think they're just familiarizing the fan base with her because that's around the corner, perhaps even at Payback?
Yeah, I don't think they ever planned. I agree with you. I think it was just to plant a seed to eventually do Tiffany Stratton versus Becky Lynch at probably at an NXT show. But I do like how they're integrating main roster and NXT into each other more and more. I think they realized after they did the Rhea Ripley and Dominic Mysterio title win a month ago now. I think they realized that not only did it pop a huge number for NXT, but in general, it kind of works. They've tried this a lot of times. They're very on and off sometimes. Like, I remember when Triple H took over, they did this whole program between AJ Styles and Grayson Waller, which I don't think it ever truly took off, but they integrated it on Raw quite a lot. And then they didn't do a lot until the Rhea Ripley and Dominic Mysterio angle. I don't think this is going to interfere during the Payback match between Becky Lynch and Trish Stratus. But like you said, I think this deal after Payback, Becky Lynch will get into a program with Tiffany, probably for NXT No Mercy.
Brad, what do you think about that?
I don't know. I mean, I do obviously think they're integrating everything, and you could see it with Rhea being down there every week and everything. But I do think Becky is going to be Tiffany's next, or Tiffany's going to be Becky's next opponent in some way, because they had a major run-in where Tiffany said her name in a promo, and then she clarified it, and then Becky tweeted, "I might be the next NXT champ. I might want to be the NXT champ," or something like that. I think that is what's coming. And that's why I was kind of surprised that Tiffany didn't engage in any way in this. But whatever, regardless, again, I think it was, obviously it was just planting seeds, but I just thought it would have been more the way they kept showing her. The other thing, you know, there was a lot of Bray, obviously, and expectedly so, like Kevin Owens wearing the armband, Seth Rollins wearing the armband, Becky holding the Bray band at the end, and really looking like she was about to break down. I mean, I kind of think that was pretty real at the end there when she was sitting on the crate as they faded out. If you didn't, I don't know if you noticed, but I saw that Seth was wearing Bray Wyatt side plates on his belt, on his championship belt in the ring, which was very, very cool. So he didn't have the, you know, the Seth Rollins logo. He had the Fiend face on his side plates, which was cool. I'd love to know, I don't know if you have an on-site correspondent. I'd love to know what the dark matches were, because I'd love to know if Cody was involved at all, or just speaking of one other NXT person, Trick Williams, who is, you know, kind of Carmelo Hayes' sidekick, only because the entire night the crowd was chanting, "Whoop that Trick," and that's like what they say for Trick Williams. And they were saying that this the entire night, so I'm wondering if, like, maybe it started off like that before they went off on air, and then they, you know, just continued it throughout the night, or if it was just something they were saying in Memphis for some reason. But just kind of an odd saying for an entire crowd to be chanting, you know what I mean? But the Seth Nakamura thing was unbelievably well done. I mean, there was almost nothing that could have gotten me excited for this. And now, after what I saw in the ring, this was a more vicious Nakamura, but it made sense. Like, before this, I felt like it didn't make sense. He just did it masterfully. I thought that Seth, you know, it leaves, like you said, Wade, that doubt of, like, I think it's like, you know, I don't want to say a coin flip that Nakamura wins, but I'd say 60-40, towards Seth. There's a very good chance that Nakamura could win this match. And they just did a great job of creating intrigue for a pay-per-view that didn't have any going into tonight. And one other thing is that, you know, the Gable-Gunther thing, I'm not disappointed at all that it's not on Payback. I think, you know, you need something on Raw. You can't, you know, it's a great main event for Raw. But I think that it also, like, didn't need to necessarily be on Payback. But I think that they kind of did the right thing putting it on Raw and leaving this Payback pay-per-view short and sweet. And I wanted your thoughts on that as well.
Yeah, so a number of things there. We'll work our way backwards and stand by, Brad, in case we forget. Something that you brought up along the way there. Chad Gable and Gunther, it's not related to Payback, but certainly was on Raw this week. They're hyping the main event match next week. I just continue to be impressed by Gunther. The standing on the desk to cut his promos really distinguishes him, and it fits his character. I like when he speaks in English the way that he does, but I like when he turns it up and speaks in German, and just goes on these intimidating rants. It gave me some hope that they see Ludwig Kaiser as a project worth protecting right now by not having Gable pin him clean. I'm not against clean wins, of course, but the consolation prize of not getting a clean win here and having Giovanni Vinci interfere for the DQ is it does at least send a signal to me that they might be thinking about pushing Kaiser, and maybe Gunther is abusive to him and he, you know, eventually turns babyface and feuds with Gunther. I don't know. But I took a positive from the negative of there not being a clean finish. I'll put it that way. But that match was really good, and the hype for Gable Gunther was really good. I understand, you know, they're serving multiple masters by having to have matches that people want to tune in to Raw to see. But that match, they've done a good enough job building up Gunther and Gable that I'm kind of a little disappointed it's not part of Payback. I don't want Payback to be needlessly long, but and I'm not sure which match I would replace it with that's based Raw based, because, you know, you got Becky Trish and LA Knight Miz and KO and Sam against Judgment Day and Ripley Rodriguez and Seth Nakamura. I don't know that you want to bump any of those for a Chad Gable title challenge. So, I think that would be a mistake, but it is too bad there isn't room for it. But that said, they'll have plenty of breathing space on Raw. They gave matches tonight a long time. They'll give that match a lot of time. And I like that Chad did pull back a little bit on the catchphrases. I wouldn't say that he took a giant leap towards the persona that makes me want to take him more seriously, but it was at least a step away from being too cornball. Mauricio, what did you think of the Gable-Gunther hype tonight and the match with Ludwig?
I really love their match between Gable and Kaiser. They did a lot with their time, with the time they were given. I wasn't a huge fan of the DQ ending, but I guess it's because they're pushing Kaiser. They had him beat Otis and Matt Riddle, so maybe they'll do something with that. About leaving Gable versus Gunther out of Payback, I'm really annoyed by that because I really wanted to see this match reach its full potential. And it still could do it on Raw. But I know what you said about balancing the card and just not taking out a match that is from SmackDown. But I really don't care about Rey Mysterio versus Austin Theory. And I really wouldn't mind if it was taken out of the card.
Yeah.
But
yeah, they want to have some representation for SmackDown on the show, so they have something to talk about on Friday when promoting Payback. But yeah, that is the match that I would cut too, among the ones that are here. I think Raw is contributing pay-per-view quality, PLE quality matches to this show. That makes it more understandable why Gunther Gable didn't make the cut. But you know, to have Gunther essentially break the record for the IC title champion, this would be his last defense before he breaks the record, as Cole talked about, is it's unfortunate it's not happening on a PLE, which just tends to be a little more historically significant. Mauricio, go ahead. You can follow up on that, too.
I just looked at the card, and I realized it's very Raw heavy because it's Sted versus Nakamura, Becky versus Trish, Rhea versus Raquel, Kevin and Sammy versus Judgment Day, LA Knight versus The Miz, which is Mix Brand, and there's the Cody Rhodes in the Grayson Waller, which is Mix Brand. Rey versus Theory is the only SmackDown match fully on that card. So,
yes.
At this point, I would rather do this just like a Raw branded pay per view, just so we can get Gunther versus Gable on the card.
All right, Brad, you also brought up the inclusion, the tributes that wrestlers did to Bray Wyatt. This is the first time these Raw wrestlers have gathered since losing their colleague. We talked, by the way, for people who are listening to the show but didn't catch our SmackDown post show, we did a long roundtable discussion on Friday night, focused less on SmackDown, the TV show, and more on Bray Wyatt and Terry Funk and the good job that WWE did as a tribute. Brandon LeClaire and Javier Machado were with me for the bulk of the show, and we just went in depth on Bray Wyatt. So we're doing less of it here. But for Raw wrestlers, this was their first time, Mauricio, to get together and mourn together. And I'm sure it was an emotional day in Memphis for them all afternoon and evening. And I bet it will be tonight as they, you know, head out to Beale Street and have some drinks and reminisce and cry on each other's shoulders and hug each other and just, you know, obviously just share their memories and their grief. And so I was not surprised to see different tributes to him on tonight's show. I'm glad WWE for the Raw audience aired the Terry Funk and the Bray Wyatt tribute videos, just like they did on SmackDown on Friday. Mauricio, this is the first time we've had a chance to talk since the news of Bray Wyatt's death. He was just a young man and at 36 years old, having, they believe, complications from COVID that led to a deadly heart condition. And some news came out today that, you know, he died in his sleep. He just overslept his alarm and apparently wasn't wearing a defibrillator that doctors had recommended he wear to protect him in case his heart gave out. And it's just a shame. I mean, it's beyond words how sad it is that his life was cut short. His life is cut short as a father of four and his family and everything. But for wrestling fans, it's a shame because he had much more to give in terms of his legacy. Mauricio, just if you have any thoughts on that, I'd like to hear what you have to say and if you have any favorite memories of him.
Yeah, so the Bray Wyatt news hit me, you know, in a different way. Like I've been used to the, I don't want to say it in a weird way, but it's always sometimes wrestlers pass away and it's always Usually, it's usually legends that they had their time. Just like Terry Funk, he passed away at 79, he had a lengthy career and a long life. Seeing Bray Wyatt pass at 36, it hit me in a different way, especially since I've been watching since 2010. I essentially watched his whole career. I got the same feeling like when Brody Lee passed away. It's so genuinely heartbreaking to see his life end at such a young age. I still remember the first Wyatt Family versus Shield match. That was one of the first times when I realized how genuinely good tag team wrestling could be, because WWE wouldn't really push it in the spotlight. It sucks that he never. I don't think he was ever able to go I don't think we ever got to see the final vision of what he could be. We got to see the match with LA Knight, and you know, he had to go, and we never got to see what this version of Bray Wyatt could be.
Yeah. He had so much more to give as a character, you know. I mean, that's what Javier and Brandon and I talked about, especially Javier, you know, who's just tracked his career so well and has a great memory for each of the chapters. There was so much more to explore with that character, and you could tell Bray Wyatt, just this creative mind, wanted to do more with him and just scratch the surface of exploring what was next for him. So very sad, but like I said, his colleagues knew him well, and I'm sure it's a very difficult night for them. And I'm, you know, and Terry Funk too. I mean, obviously Terry Funk lived much more of a full life than Bray Wyatt. And you know, when somebody is 79 years old and lived the life that Terry Funk lived, there's a level of acceptance to that being the end for him. But with Bray, it's much more difficult. But I'm sure there's wrestlers talking about their favorite Terry Funk memories too tonight, and hopefully sharing some laughs, because Terry Funk and Bray Wyatt brought smiles to a lot of people's faces, a lot of his colleagues behind the scenes. That's for sure true for both of them. Brad, was there another topic that you brought up that we didn't cover there?
No, very good job, guys. I'll be very quick, because I'm sure you want to get to other people, but are you guys surprised on that note that Roman has not tweeted anything or said anything, or do you think he's waiting for a moment to do a very big something or other somewhere on TV the next time he's on? I'm just surprised, you know, out of all, you know, representation of WWE, like pretty much every person, whether it's Top Dollar or this or that, you know, everyone has said something, with the exception of really Roman and I guess Paul Heyman. I don't know if Paul Heyman said anything, but it's really just kind of a little glaring, and I don't think Roman's a bad guy. I'm sure Roman's devastated over this, but I'm just a little curious on that. And then my other question that I regarding tonight is, you know, this tag team title. I mean, do you think that Judgment Day has a very good chance of winning these tag team titles? I mean, Ripley told them, do not come home without the gold, or we'll have to rethink this thing. I mean, one strange thing that I was thinking about is there a way that you can see Damian Priest, I guess, showing his loyalty to this faction and to this family by using his briefcase to somehow cash in? And what I mean is, like, let's just say Kevin Owens and Sammy beat them, and then they start beating them down in the ring after the match. Can Damian Priest use his briefcase to cash in on the tag team titles on behalf of Finn and himself, after they've beaten them down sufficiently post-match, and do another rerun it back? I know those are two totally different things to bring up, but I just don't want to be too long. And thank you guys for taking the call. I'm just really curious on whether you see that coming, because I don't know. I just don't see a scenario where Priest uses his briefcase anytime soon based on the way things are going, except for something like this to prove a loyalty.
Yeah, Brad, thank you. Appreciate the call as always. I think that is intriguing because there isn't, Mauricio, an obvious way for Priest to cash in against Seth because Priest seems like he's leaning more babyface. Now, as a heel, he could cash in against Seth, but that's not a good way to then turn babyface, is you are holding a title that you won in a kind of a cheap way. And I don't think Seth is going to lose the title anytime soon. I don't think Nakamura is going to win the title, and then Priest cashes in on him, either at Payback or at another time. They haven't even hinted at that. So Brad brings up an intriguing scenario, which is in order to keep Judgment Day together, would Priest, who has issues with Finn Balor and JD McDonagh, sacrifice money in the Money in the Bank briefcase if he saw an opening to win the tag team titles to try to show loyalty to Judgment Day? I mean, when Brad first brought it up, I was like, nope, no way. This is an easy answer. And the more he talked, the more I thought, it sounds like a creative, unexpected twist that would get them out of the conundrum of how to have Priest otherwise cash in that briefcase if Seth remains champion. Now, granted, there's a long way between now and when that briefcase expires next summer, so there's no rush. But that would be a surprising storyline. I don't know if they've ever established the rules that if you're allowed to do it for you on behalf of you and a tag team partner. But Mauricio, what do you think of that?
So I personally don't think it really happens, but there is a possibility. I mean, last year, Theory cashed in on the United States title. And I remember when Otis had the briefcase, he was saying that he was going to cash it for Heavy Machinery before losing it to The Miz. So it is a possibility. I don't think it will happen. I genuinely think they'll drag this story between the Judgment Day and JD McDonagh for way longer than I expected. But at the same time, I think there might be something on this pay-per-view, because just looking at the posters and graphics, it's all themed around the Judgment Day, and I don't think there's a clear main event. So assuming, let's say, Rollins versus Nakamura main event the show, maybe there's a chance Priest can cash in.
Yeah.
Because I'm not sure if him and Finn will win because the tag titles. Maybe the Priest and Finn's match against Sami and Kevin will be maybe their breaking point, where they either break up or are forced to have JD McDonagh join the group.
If they don't win the tag titles, that's what it seemed like the promo tonight set up, more so than all being well. But, I mean, you can make the case. Rhea's going to retain her title. Priest and Balor win the titles. Judgment Day stays together. That's even with Rhea's threat, sort of gives extra incentive to Priest and Balor to get along, so that they don't have to deal with whatever Rhea wants to do to change things. They know it's sort of make or break as far as their group goes. So they've created more of a reason for them to win. And if that happens, then, you know, Balor and Priest have to try to get along as tag champs. And their breakup can happen as a result of a breakup, kind of like Ripley, Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler. They could go that route where the loss is due to misunderstandings in a tag match or frustrations over losing the tag titles. So them winning the belts makes sense. And they might want to move on from KO and Sammy being a team. They might think they need them as singles wrestlers too. And so it's a good time to end that. I could see it going that direction. But I can see Sammy and KO retaining too, and that leading to changes in Judgment Day with Priest. You know, obviously Priest wasn't happy with JD interfering, not just because it's JD, but I think Priest just sort of felt like, I didn't need your help. I didn't ask for your help. So the dynamic there is really interesting. And, you know, I talk about Nakamura overachieving. One of the things that's been fun about Raw is how many wrestlers' characters are overachieving these days on that show. You know, Nakamura is one of them. I think Zoe Stark is one of them. I've made the case, and people have pushed back, that Trish Stratus is overachieving based at least on my low expectations of what her promo work would be as a heel. I'm not saying she's anywhere near promo of the year, but I just think they're getting the most they can out of so many other wrestlers right now. And so Judgment Day are a big part of it. And I'd be kind of bummed out if we didn't get more of the dynamic in that group being stretched out, but in a way that I think can hold the fans' interest. And JD McDonagh is one of those people who I think is, I don't know if overachieves is a word. He didn't have a lot of body work on the main roster to judge from, but he's, I think, really made an impression early too. So yeah, Mauricio, I think this can go a lot of different ways, and Judgment Day are a big part of Raw. Rhea Ripley deserves mention as really standing out as a personality now. She's really become, I think, a more well-rounded character too. And whatever they do at Payback, I think it is going to be focused more on what benefits Judgment Day more than it has to do with KO and Sammy, which is kind of crazy to say. Mauricio, back to you if you want to comment on any of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you said, it's really become the Judgment Day show. So, maybe there is such a chance Kevin and Sammy lose the titles, because the more I think about it, I mean, Kevin has been injured for a while, so it feels like they haven't done anything with the belts. But goddamn, right now I'm thinking if Kevin and Sammy lose the belts, that means they'll keep on feuding with Judgment Day, and I'm kind of already done with that, because I checked their page on Cage Match, and they faced over a dozen times since June. Like I get it's a feud, but it's a huge feud. It's the crux of Raw. But the more I think about it, the more I just want Kevin and Sammy to win, so we can move past Judgment Day versus Kevin and Sammy.
Yeah.
And move to, I'm assuming JD joining the Judgment Day. Maybe JD replacing a member of Judgment Day. That could be interesting.
I think JD's impressed me enough where I'd be okay with that. And Priest has impressed me enough where I'd be okay with him being a top babyface on Raw. I've got to look at the Raw roster and kind of create a little depth chart and imagine like where everybody falls. And if, you know, where the strengths are, because I don't right off the top of my head kind of have that in place. But I'm not against Priest being part of Judgment Day for another, you know, couple months and trying to get along with JD and see if they have more story to tell with those two. So, yeah, it's good stuff. Anything more you want to add on that, Mauricio, or should we move on?
Yeah, I think I'm done. Like this. Let's move on.
Yep. So, did Brad bring up one other? Oh, the Roman Reigns not tweeting. Boy, different people mourn in different ways. I do not want to be part of a chorus of people expecting every wrestler to declare publicly through social media, especially certain social media brands that maybe they don't want to associate with anymore. And I haven't tracked like how active Roman is and all that, but sometimes people want to pay tribute in a private way instead of a public way. And I really respect that. I mean, I don't have no problem with people publicly posting their thoughts and their memories, but if someone wants to do that privately, they can too. So I haven't tracked which wrestlers have commented and who haven't. But Brad's question, you know, it's something that'll stick with me. I guess, you know, I might ask around a little bit. Hopefully it's not due to any personal issues with them. But you know what, if Roman wasn't close with him and didn't have a lot to say, that's fine too. But, you know, he has a heel character right now. I would expect if he was a lead babyface, no matter what, for him to represent the company and say something. Mauricio, do you have any knowledge of that or insight or thoughts?
Not really. I do agree that, yeah, it's Roman Reigns, regardless of how well he knew Bray Wyatt, maybe they were close friends, maybe they barely knew each other, he has the right to mourn however he wants. I mean, I bet there are a lot of people who didn't comment on Bray Wyatt, but Roman gets a bit of the spotlight because he is the top guy. But
exactly.
I don't think it's a major issue. I don't think it should be huge news that Roman Reigns doesn't mourn Bray Wyatt. But I just think he's mourning his own way, and it's all right. It's not like this is a huge controversy that Roman Reigns has to address. No one really has to address anything in this situation.
I agree. All right, we got an email for Brad's question that I momentarily forgot about. Danaz says, for Brad, while Trick Williams has revived the chant in a wrestling context, the phrase itself comes from the 2005 film Hustle and Flow, based in Memphis, Tennessee. So Whoop That Trick is a Memphis thing. So, Brad, there's your answer. So that's good. We don't have anyone else on hold at the moment, so if you want to give us a call, you can have a short wait time. The number is 347-215-8558. If you're listening to us on delay, Consider this a nudge to listen live and give us a call next week or the week after or the week after that. We'd love to have some first-time callers join us. You can carve out some time after Raw if you don't have to get to sleep right away for work and join us and have a voice on this show. It's a cool platform for your voice to be heard, so consider yourself invited. But if you're live streaming now, 347-215-8558 and push 1 on your keypad to join us. All right, we'll go to a subject we haven't talked about yet, which is Miz cutting a promo on LA Knight. That is a co-Raw SmackDown match on Payback, so SmackDown represented there a little bit. Jay from New York says, I just watched that Miz promo, and it was, sorry for the easy reach here, awesome. Is it me, or was he speaking a whole lot of truth about LA Knight and LA Knight's fans, too? I hope Knight has a good rebuttal on SmackDown. Miz is doing some great work in this feud. Thanks, and take care. So, Mauricio, what do you think of Miz coming out there and mocking LA Knight by doing a pretty good LA Knight impersonation in a way that sort of cheapens what LA Knight does if Miz can go out and also do it? Now, Miz was doing it in a mocking way, a little bit over the top, but it didn't seem all that different than LA Knight. And as Miz, you know, and I thought Miz brought it around to hyping the specific match, because after he got done making fun of his Yaz and saying his name sounds like something on a Cinemax movie in 1997, which is quite the reference, he said that when he says he's awesome, it's not a catchphrase, it's just reality. And he says fans don't cheer losers, and in 5 days, Knight will be a loser. And so that will be how he shuts up LA Knight's fans by beating LA Knight. And then Cole framed it, and I think it's important that Michael Cole did this. This is why I say announcing is so important during matches and as what is said after major angles and promos. Cole said Miz is just jealous and upset with the attention Knight is getting. And then Wade Barrett continued to do his bit where he's obsessed as like a stan or a number one fan for LA Knight. Cole shook his head in dismay at that. So, Mauricio, what did you think of Miz's promo? And broadly speaking, because we haven't talked for a while, what do you think about the way that they're framing LA Knight's character, and talking openly about him maybe being a fad who's kind of paper thin and maybe he's more popular with fans than he is good and deserving to be a main event player and having Miz be the voice for that?
For this segment, I thought it was good, but there was something about Miz's promo that didn't fully click with me, and I'm not quite sure what it was.
Yeah, that's how you wrote that in your report.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I didn't think it was that great. That's the huge segment I expected for the go-home show. But then again, since this is a co-branded feud, maybe they'll do something even bigger for SmackDown. As for the way they presented this feud around LA Knight and the way he talks, the way he presents himself, I do like how they pointed out how LA Knight could be a fat, but I think that segment, the first one they had between Miz and LA Knight after SummerSlam, to me that was the huge example that LA Knight is more than a fat. I mean, it's a case where he can cut funny, entertaining promos all the time, but when he's actually given someone to go back and forth with, he can genuinely go out and make a great promo. I mean, just something memorable. And in a way, I kind of compare it to, like, let's say MJF, who can cut a good promo every all the time, but it's always something special. It always becomes special when he's in a personal feud or something. And I think LA Knight, yeah, he could be a fat, but that first interaction he had with the Miz, it was something genuinely special. And I'm still shocked at how invested I, for the most part, I'm still in this feud. But I do like how they've incorporated it, the way people compare LA Knight to, let's say, to Attitude Era stars and call him a poser or that he's copying them, and uses to establish LA as more than that. Like, yes, he's picking up something from elements from those times, but he's still his own person,
yeah.
And he can still, and he proved it a few weeks ago, he can still cut promos that are more than just screaming, yeah.
Do you think by acknowledging what people are critical of LA Knight for, or the doubts that they have in him, is hurting him or ultimately helpful, because they're acknowledging what's being said, so they're not running from it, and then LA Knight can just persevere. He can push through it and end up proving those people wrong. But doing but bringing it up, it actually gives him a chance to, so to speak, knock that pin down and prove that that critique does not stand, because he'll remain popular and achieve beyond that and expand his character beyond what people are saying he is and what his limitations are. You're basically like putting out there for the fans to go, all right, Miz is saying this, and it rings somewhat true, but then LA Knight overcomes it, and you kind of put it behind you. It's no longer something that people can say because they've addressed it, and LA Knight surpassed that low bar that people set, or that low ceiling that people predicted he would have. So is that helpful, or do you think they shouldn't have addressed this at all because they let some social media comments get to them, and they should have just pushed LA Knight and not introduced to a big part of the fan base who hadn't thought of him as some derivative paper-thin catchphrase guy? Now they've introduced that, and now maybe people are going to look at him that way and think less of him. Is it more positive or more negative, Mauricio?
I don't think it's way more positive, because, I mean, in the age of social media, it kind of helps to acknowledge these things, to me, to make people realize that yeah, these words, the WWE word, acknowledges these things, realizes what the people are thinking. Like, I don't want to bring a lot of other companies in, but AEW does a lot of acknowledging when let's say the people turn on someone, or the people are calling or have nicknames or something about someone, and they usually acknowledge it, either as a gag or maybe as a crux of a feud, but they acknowledge it. And I like how, and I think this does work for LA Knight, because, like you said, he's overcoming all the critiques, all that he's just an Attitude Era mock-up character. I think it's really, once again, I didn't expect to care about this feud, but it's genuinely one of the better choices they could have done with babyface LA Knight.
Yeah. All right. Very good. Well put. I want to add that Jerry Lawler, WWE, posted this on Twitter X, that during a commercial break, Jerry Lawler came out in front of the fans in Memphis. And they had made a reference to him. Michael Cole said that he hung out with Jerry Lawler and joked with Wade Barrett about what Jerry Lawler thought of him. So, and they do have a clip up on Twitter X, if people want to see it, of Jerry Lawler coming out with a gray beard and smiling and saying hello to the Memphis fans. So that was cool. Also, by the way, a little sidebar, they did pay tribute not only to Terry Funk and Bray Wyatt, but Bob Barker, who died a couple days ago. He is a longtime host and beloved game show host on The Price is Right. It's a show that I grew up with, and just, you know, anytime I see that show and see the colorful set and hear the music and all the games, it brings me back to being a kid on summer break or spring break or in the summer or on a sick day. And I thought they did a nice tribute to him too. I would have felt bad if the news of Bray Wyatt and Terry Funk led to them thinking maybe we don't want to bring up Bob Barker, and they're not bringing him up. He's a beloved enough celebrity, and did such a good job as a guest host, and did win a Slammy for it. I was glad that they acknowledged him. Mauricio, are you familiar with Bob Barker?
Kind of. It's a weird thing where I knew the name Bob Barker, but I don't really get the prices right. So I don't. That's a show that doesn't air where I live. So
yeah,
I wasn't aware of him. Weirdly enough, because I remember watching a YouTube video that listed some of the good guest hosts that Raw had, and he was near the top. I was And I was like, ah, it's cool that the guy from the Price is Right was actually, it was one of the good guest hosts that Raw had. So it's sad one thing that he passed away, but I mean, it's cool that WWE acknowledged that he once appeared in WWE, and it was an entertaining moment.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, we'll go to Azan, who emailed, and he said, what do you think of Wade Barrett's work as color commentator on Raw so far? For someone in a heel announce role, he comes off more neutral than heelish. Mauricio, what do you think of what Wade Barrett has done on commentary so far? I know he kind of got stuck with cheering a babyface in LA Knight because at first he was obsessed with him when he was a heel, and rather than dump him, he's just remained a super fan. But I still think Barrett is defending heels more often on commentary. I think he comes across as a heel commentator, but he does so in a way that I think is less arbitrary and cartoonish. But what do you think of what he's done so far?
I'm going to be slightly honest. I'm not – I mean, I did hear a lot of Wade Barrett's work before he came on Raw, and I really liked him. Where I live, I watch Raw from this streaming service, and I only get Spanish commentary. So I haven't heard Wade Barrett's commentary in a while.
I am curious about that. What do you think – by listening to the Spanish commentary that you hear that surprises you? Is there anything that surprises you about what you hear about the commentary from Cole and Barrett or Kevin Patrick and Corey Graves prior? And is there anything that the Spanish commentary does that frames things differently than how you read or hear in my reports or the reports or on social media or our podcast? Are there things that you pick up on that are different or things that are framed differently by the Spanish announce team than what you hear the English team doing?
Generally, I think the English team usually does. I think it's more general. I mean, even you know, like say Wade Barrett or Booker T, where the heel commentators are, to an extent, they try to be more neutral. But there is this one guy, I think his name is Marcelo Rodriguez. He leans very heavily on being a heel commentator. He leans very heavily on always burying the baby faces and cheering the heels. Kind of reminds me of, let's say, 2010, 2011 Michael Cole.
Do you like the Spanish announce team? Do you think that Paul Levesque and Vince McMahon should be happy with the job the Spanish announce team are doing, or do you think that that they are not serving the product well the way that they approach the commentary?
I mean, they're fine. This is a weird thing where for the longest time, let's say throughout the whole 2000s and early 2010s, there were these two guys that used to do the Spanish commentary. I think they're both moved on to AAA over the past few years, and I remember they were like, even before I started watching wrestling, when my father and my brother used to watch it, I remember their voices, and they used to be so iconic. So right now I have this weird thing where I don't really connect with the current team. Like, they do a decent job, but I personally don't connect with them. But that's probably just nostalgia speaking, because for the most part they have decent chemistry and they are fine. I'm not a huge fan of heel commentators, but that's a general thing. That's not a problem with the Spanish team specifically.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Very good. Zahn also says, is it just me, or do the Viking Raiders just come off as a goofy gimmick from the mid-90s WCW era rather than a serious heel tag team in 2023? Michael Cole tried to frame the Viking Raiders tonight on his commentary as, you know, feeling like that they have let their gods down and they need to create chaos and violence in order to satisfy their gods, and frame them a little bit. I don't know if that makes them more or less cartoonish, but maybe adds a little edge and a little sinister tone to them. But they are so gimmicky on a show full of wrestling characters who are more grounded. I mean, there are exceptions, but the Viking Raiders do seem like they're playing dress up in this sort of gimmick that, yeah, I mean, saying that they are out of the mid-90s isn't a bad time frame to put them. Mauricio, what do you think of the Viking Raiders? Would you change the way that they're portrayed, tweak it, overhaul it, or do you think it's working well enough as it is?
I don't want to be negative, but I kind of agree. I liked it. The main roster call-up was probably one of the worst things that could have happened to the Viking Raiders, because when they were in NXT or before they even arrived to WWE, War Machine or the War Raiders, they were both interpretations of that act looks cool. They looked like killers, but it was never too over the top. Once they were called up to the main roster as the Viking Experience and then the Viking Raiders, I don't think they ever fully recovered. Either they were babyface goofs or whatever this presentation, which is, I mean, it's more serious, which is better, but they kind of feel out of place.
That's well put. Yeah, they feel out of place. That's a good way to put it. And yeah, go ahead. I just wanted to comment. That makes sense. They do feel like they were dropped in from a different era into a show that's doing something different than their type of act.
I mean, these guys, it feels like most of the characters currently on Raw are, you could feasibly see them in real life. Even Seth Rollins feels like he's just playing mind games with how kooky and crazy he tries to be. But, I mean, I could see maybe the Viking Raiders fit in, let's say, Impact Wrestling or Lucha Underground, but in this current version of WWE, I don't think they fit. Maybe in NXT, but
yeah.
But on the main roster, they feel out of place. And I would rather they just be a serious tag team, not stop leaning so much on being Vikings.
Yeah, I think their ceiling is higher if they were to shift away from the gimmick aspect of it, and were, like you said, people you could imagine being similar in real life. You don't buy at all as a viewer that if you bumped into them at the hotel that they would be like taking their gimmick on the road off camera in any kind of a way. But you can imagine Seth walking into a hotel going, ha ha ha, you know, where's the front desk? And, you know, just kind of playfully playing up his persona. But if the Raiders did it, you would be like, oh, that's just dumb. Seriously, people, like, guys, stop that. It's dumb. You're not on television anymore. There's just a difference. And it's hard to explain, like, to a non-wrestling fan what the difference is, you know, but it does, they do seem like they don't fit in. So, but they're a good tag team, you know, they're good wrestlers. And it's kind of a shame that they have kind of this, you know, what seems like kind of a cosplay or timey, out of date gimmick that had its time and that time has passed. Azan, by the way, also mentioned Bob Barker. He said WWE did an excellent video on Bob Barker this evening. The guest host era of Raw got me into WWE at a young age. So cool stuff there. Mauricio, I know you got a little bit of a late start talking about the build payback, and I talked about the top two matches. Is there anything else you want to add to what they did with Zoe and Becky and Trish tonight to build up that cage match and to just deliver on the False Count Anywhere match that was a main event of Raw?
Genuinely, tonight's main event is probably the best thing they could have done with these dudes. They really hasn't been working with me in general, but especially after SummerSlam. I mean, they lost their shots to end this feud at SummerSlam, but this show, I don't think they fully reignited the feud, but it's as close as they could have. The match was excellent, and it's cool. I didn't expect Trish Stratus to take so many bumps throughout the whole thing. I'm not sure what it could mean event payback, because as much as I like Rollins versus Nakamura, it still feels like a bit of a lesser of a program. So between these, Becky Trish, and maybe Kevin and Sami versus Judgment Day, I think either of these three matches could main event. And last week, yeah, I didn't think Becky versus Trish could because of how cold their segment felt. This week was a home run. This week's match was a home run.
What do you think they're doing with Zoe Stark accidentally shoving Trish Stratus? Does that play into something Saturday? Is it planting a seed for something later? It feels too early for Zoe and Trish to break up, but I don't really understand how this would – I haven't come up with a scenario that just makes obvious sense in terms of why they would do that if it is supposed to help lead to a finish to a cage match. Like, to me, Trish and Becky in a cage should not involve Zoe Stark at all. Like, you want to protect – more often than not, you want to protect the integrity of a cage match, which is to keep wrestlers in a cage and keep anybody else out. And it doesn't seem like Zoe would be upset with Trish. Trish would be upset with Zoe. So why do you think they did that finish?
My current gut guess depends on how long we're getting Trish Stratus. Maybe after Payback, she's going to take a break. And if that's the case, the way I could see things play out, it's Zoe Trish loses at Payback. Maybe there is interference from Zoe. Maybe the reasons that's beyond the point. The next night on Raw, maybe you could have Trish berate Zoe Stark for causing her, for hurting her before the pay per view. Maybe there's something happens at Payback, and Zoe maybe snaps. Maybe she kills Trish Stratus, not literally, but you can have her assault Trish Stratus, and that way you can write Trish, maybe not permanently, maybe until Survivor Series or the Rumble, and you give Zoe a lot of hits because tonight they've established that Zoe already fails Trish, not only by losing this match, but she punched her. So I could see this being the setup for Zoe to take Trish out for the time being and get hits from the back of it. And maybe even set up Zoe versus Trish. I'm not sure if WrestleMania, it feels too far, but maybe for the Rumble or Survivor Series.
Yeah, yep, I can see that. We didn't talk too much about Rhea Ripley and Raquel Rodriguez. That's another match on Payback. What do you expect to see there on Saturday? What do you think they're going to do? And does Rhea retain the title, or do maybe Priest and Balor win the tag titles and Rhea loses her title, and then Rhea has to, back down from her, you know, get it, it humbled her a little bit because she's been really in the face of Priest and Balor. There's different things they could do. Did you draw anything from what they did tonight in terms of hints of what they might be doing? And do you think Raquel Rodriguez looked good in her role tonight as a challenger?
I mean, Raquel looked fine. I didn't hate what I saw, but I don't think this suit has nowhere near the amount of substance to actually make me feel like Raquel has a chance to win the belt. Rhea, even though I haven't liked a lot of her booking over the past few months, is still one of the most over wrestlers on the brand. I think this match will be good because they had good matches back in NXT. I think it's Rhea's most competitive match. I think this is alongside with LA Knight versus The Miz, the easiest match to call for me. I'm very sure Rhea is retaining. And I'm still not that invested in Raquel Rodriguez.
Is Raquel's future as a babyface or a heel, do you think?
Maybe she could pull it out as a babyface, but so far, I think she'd be better as a heel. I mean, she was a heel for most of her run in NXT, and she looked good enough there. As a babyface, genuinely, I don't think they have shown me anything beyond she smiles and she has a back. I don't know what's her character beyond those two things.
That's so well put. Yeah, a smile and a back. Yeah, I'm not optimistic. I'm not overly pessimistic. I just think she's not where she needs to arrive at in order to be a top star. but I won't rule out that she can be. But I don't know that I'm going to buy her as a heel any more than I buy her as a face. That's the challenge she faces. But I mean, we've seen Rhea Ripley just shine and really come into her own. So we'll see. I mean, she's got some things going for her, but you know, she may not. She may not quickly find her voice and her character in a way that makes her, I think, what WWE wants her to be, you know, which is a top, you know, perennial top six women's wrestler in their company. Because there's things they like about her, but I just don't know if she's going to find that anytime soon. Mauricio, is there anything else from tonight's show that you want to bring up before we sign off?
I quickly checked in the whole card if there is anything. Sammy versus Damian. There is this. I mean, there are two things. First, yeah. There's Matt Riddle and Drew McIntyre. They are doing this whole thing that we're.
Oh yeah.
They are doing another makeshift tag team. I don't think this is going to last. I mean, Matt Riddle's half of his career on the main roster has been doing these goofy. That can they coexist tag teams? He did it with Randy Orton. He was doing it for a bit with Elias. Back in NXT, he was doing it with Pete Dunne. But I think Drew McIntyre is going to be the first guy to actually turn on Riddle.
Do you think that is a good way for Drew to turn heel on the beloved, innocent, dopey Matt Riddle? Is that a good way for Drew to turn, and will that get him a lot of heel heat? And would that be a good first feud for him?
Yeah, I mean, Drew, I like Drew a lot, but ever since we came back from the pandemic, from where shows went back to the roads, don't think he has been able to find himself. I remember his first singles pay-per-view match after WWE went back to the road was against Jinder Mahal. Drew McIntyre has... It sucks that he lost. He didn't get to win the world title in front of people. And aside from the month previous to Clash at the Castle, where they booked him like a genuine threat to Roman Reigns, Drew has lost all momentum. Mm-hmm. Genuinely, let's turn Drew heel, and there you can do so many more. Programs you could do Drew versus Rollins, Drew versus maybe some combination of Sammy and Kevin. They said Drew versus Chad Gable would be fun, but the main Drew feud I think that could work, and it's also my second point. It's Cody Rhodes versus Drew.
Yeah.
would be like a top program, and also Cody Rhodes was not on this show.
That's right. Yep.
I can't remember the last.
That's a good point.
This is the first show he's missed since returning from injury. I'm genuinely shocked that Cody was not on the show at all. But at the same time, I mean, he wasn't doing anything before that. I don't want to go back too much on the Cody should have won at WrestleMania and but ever since doing his loss at WrestleMania. He did the Brock Lesnar feud for most of the time, which never got an explanation. He did that 1 month feud with Dominic Mysterio, which ended in a kind of underwhelming match. And after SummerSlam, he's been just hanging there, doing assisting Sami and Kevin, teasing something with Seth Rollins, but he has nothing to do. Drew McIntyre could be an excellent choice. If they're really committing to Cody versus Roman at WrestleMania 40, you need a huge name to keep Cody occupied until you arrive, and Drew McIntyre would be a great choice.
Yes. I'm glad you brought that up. We also had Bronson Reed and Tommaso Ciampa. A bit of a sloppy finish, unfortunately. There was a move a few seconds before that Ciampa hit where it seemed to come up a little short. It wasn't the crispest match. At times, but other times it was good. It was hard hitting. And I mean, they only went about six minutes and only about four of it aired on TV. So there wasn't a big sample size. Is this just two mid-carders having a mid-card feud, or can it be more than that? And if so, do you like them investing in Ciampa again, or do you think Bronson Reed should not be losing to Tommaso Ciampa because Bronson Reed is the one with the bigger upside?
There's in this weird position where I want WWE to push both of these guys, and this just giving it 4 to 6 minutes, I don't think that's a lot of favors for Bronson Reed. I mean, earlier this year he was presented in the Elimination Chamber as someone that everyone had to team up to eliminate, and now I think they've taken out. He didn't have the biggest aura, but he had a bit of an aura that this guy is tough to beat, that this is a threat that maybe with the right position could have challenged for the world title. But now I don't know what they are doing with Bronson Reed. I genuinely think Bronson should have won, and you should have let Ciampa. I want them to push Ciampa, but they've also been teasing this thing with that about reuniting DIY. So if that's the actual plan, I don't think Ciampa needed a singles win.
I agree. That's the curious thing is why have Ciampa win a singles match if he's going to be in the tag team division, unless it's a reflection on them losing some interest in Bronson Reed. Now, sometimes wrestlers are in the mid-card, they just trade wins, and we shouldn't read too much into it, and that's probably what's going on here. They just want DIY to be a stronger team. When and if they reunite and Bronson Reed can recover from, frankly, a leverage pin, even if it would have gone smoothly, it still would have been a leverage pin. So that's probably all there is. It's probably not a lot worth reading into beyond that. But, it's still, you know, Bronson Reed could have been someone that they were dedicated to protecting, and that certainly has not been the case.
I really hope they find something for Bronson Reed because it feels like they have something with him and they start pushing him and they don't commit to it. I remember when we were doing Backlash at Puerto Rico, I remember that he was in this huge feud with Bobby Lashley and they never concluded because the draft happened and they did this triple threat with Austin Theory. So we never got a proper conclusion to Reed versus Lashley. I just feel with that they have yet to commit to pushing Bronson Reed, which sucks because I'm happy that he returned to WWE, but one of the last things he did before returning to WWE was beat Kazuchika Okada clean. So I'm just waiting for them to push Bronson Reed, not even as a main eventer, just as a top, as closer to a top guy, make him a challenger for Gunther. I that would be a fun match.
I think they need to be consistent in knowing who he is, deciding who he's going to be, and then presenting that to fans. Like, they've had vignettes kind of establishing his personality, and then they just drop it. And he's just a guy wrestling. He's a big guy with power moves who can do some impressive athletic things, and he trades wins. That's not a character. And so, to me, I just think they're a little lost on what to do with him. And I think we're going to see him in kind of just in the muck of the mid-card on sort of standby until they get more of an idea of how they want to portray him. And I don't have an easy answer to that, but there's still big upside for him because there's a lot of positives. But in WWE, it's hard to get a push unless they really – just can latch on to something about your personality that they feel that they can market. And they just, it's been start and stop and halfway, and then they take a step forward and then a step back. And I think they're still on a journey trying to figure out with him. Part of it too is they just don't have a spot for him higher on the card. So they're kind of on standby mode with him. But, you know, if you're on standby mode in the middle for too long, you can end up being defined down in the eyes of fans. You know, you need to have a breakout moment. And I think for him, it's not just going to be in the ring. It's going to be with fans going, now I know who this guy is, and here's how I feel about him. And I just don't think he's WWE's done a good job, nor has he done a good job figuring out what that's going to be yet.
Yeah. I really want them to find out something from Ronson, but for the time being, I guess I have to get used to him being stuck in this mid-card vortex where where she sometimes wins, sometimes loses, but never gets an actual storyline. And I just checked his cash and space, and I realized that I see some guys that are also stuck there, like Apollo Crews. I just realized, once again, that he's here. Apparently, they had a match on main event. And at this point, I don't know. Book Bronson versus Apollo on Raw. Do something.
Yeah. That'd be another mid-card feud where they trade wins. I mean, or Bronson would crush him and it'd be over quickly. But, do you have any take on New Day and their role tonight on the show? And they're the one major act we didn't talk about, I think.
No. I mean, they were fine. I think the match they had with the Viking Raiders was a bit too long for my liking. It weirdly went like 17 minutes.
I know. Yeah. That was a long match for those two. I thought I was going to bring them up, but the idea that Kofi's like, it's all good. It's all good. Don't worry, Drew. We know you didn't do it on purpose. Like, is that the end of it? Or does this fit my theory that when people say, oh, it's all good, what they're saying is, I'm harboring some resentment, but I don't want to bring it up. I want to move on, but I haven't forgotten what you did. Is there a little bit of that going on with Kofi, do you think? Or maybe it is with Xavier, but not Kofi. And Kofi's trying to cover it up, but Xavier actually will harbor resentment. And then things get shaken up a little bit. Is there something like that going on? Or do you think Drew to have a tantrum and they're actually not going to go anywhere with it? It seems like everything that happens in WWE happens for a reason when it's that deliberate.
I don't think nothing is going to happen yet, but I think that the way Kofi said it, that like he said something along the lines of, I know you didn't do it on purpose, Drew, because you're not like that, and I think there'll be another accident in the coming weeks. Maybe Drew once again accidentally hurts Kofi, and they are like, okay, what's the issue here? Two times in a row, and maybe let's see. That you do Drew and Riddle versus New Day, and Drew goes even closer to being a heel. And at this time, and Riddle maybe tries to call him out on that, and that's when you have Drew kill Riddle. I think they'll drag this a bit longer, but yeah, I think this is another clue that we're going into a Drew heel turn.
The beginning of the origin story of why Drew turns heel, and perhaps it's him showing more of a temper and a recklessness, and then not wanting to face being held accountable for it when it happens again. And, you know, Kofi's very gracious and magnanimous going, I know you didn't mean it, it happens again. And then maybe, and it might be the New Day, it might be to somebody else, and they're like, wait a second, does he have a reckless disregard for others, and he has a temper? And then Drew doesn't like the fact that people are questioning him about it, and then that is actually what is the spark that leads to him turning heel. Because so often in pro wrestling, and it frustrates me, wrestlers sort of arbitrarily turn from heel to face, or babyface to heel. This is an origin story that might take some time, but we might have seen the first chapter of it tonight, and it isn't about New Day. It's about Drew doing it again and not liking anyone bringing it up, that maybe he needs to control his temper or be more careful. And he reacts poorly to that, and that then leads to, him going full-fledged heel. So, yeah, I could see this as very much a key moment on the path to him turning heel.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's great having you on again. I genuinely enjoy our discussions about this. You bring so much to our discussion with your analysis and your perception. So I appreciate you being a co-host again, and we will do it again soon. And I encourage people to check out your written reports at pwtorch.com alongside mine every Monday night at pwtorch.com. Mauricio, thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Thanks for having me back. It's the second time.
Yes,
yeah. second ever podcast. And I think I'm way less nervous than that last time.
I could tell.
But also I kind of panicked at the start because I couldn't get my connection to work. But by the end I think I'm fine.
Yes. No, you were great. Thank you, and we will do this again soon. Absolutely. Thank you to our listeners and our caller and email participation, and we'll talk to y'all next time.